Today I want to talk about reaching out for what you want without creating resistance in yourself and others. We all want to reach out for what we want. At least we think we do, we say we do, and sometimes we don't do the reaching. We wish we would, but we don't. So the way to reach out for what you want without creating resistance in yourself and others is not to bother having the perception of a threat, because we resist threats. Our survival instincts make us change physiologically when we perceive a threat, and we're going to resist them. Changing physiologically means we're going to change emotionally, and we're going to change mentally as well. When we resist threats, whether they're real threats or imagined threats, you know, the ones we conjure up in our minds with negative self-talk, we're going to degrade our ability to think and to reason, to be emotionally resilient, and to be physically flexible, because we would have already created a fight-or-flight stress pattern in ourselves. If you think about it, getting what we want seems to occur only if one or two conditions exist. We reach out for it, or number two, is it's given to us without our energetic involvement. You know, it falls out of the sky or falls into our lap, so to speak. That tends to be a rare occurrence. All living things, though, have the ability to reach out for what they want. Plants even have roots that grow into the soil to reach out for nutrients and water. Leaves and flowers of those plants reach out for sunlight and rain and air. Amoeba, you know, and other one-celled animals, either extend themselves, that is, they reach out, they move their bodies to engulf what it is they're reaching for, or they move themselves over next to the object of attention, and then they take it in to themselves. Human babies are born with a sucking instinct that makes them able to drink mother's milk. They're reaching out for what they want. Baby birds, you see these pictures in National Geographic kind of movies and so on, Discover, and you see these baby birds reaching up so the mothers, the adults, can drop food into their beaks. Not reaching out dooms the living thing to a stunted growth, or possibly death. We're all familiar with, on some level, the orphans in Eastern Europe orphanages post-World War II and during the conflicts during the Cold War. And these are the infants in an orphanage that didn't get enough normal human contact. They weren't touched, they got fed whatever they got fed, but there was very limited human contact. And so those infants, without that contact, didn't thrive. In fact, without getting practice reaching out for that contact, for what they wanted, what they needed, and without succeeding at it, these children had stunted physical, mental, and emotional growth, and in certain cases, they died of, we'll say, emotional or contact starvation. They didn't have the capabilities, or they were in an environment that trained them out of doing what a normal infant would do. I wonder if we could describe depression as the state that a person who's concluded that they can't effectively reach out for what they want. Well, it doesn't make any difference whether I reach out or not. I can't reach out because I'm not going to get it, so I've stopped reaching out. Doesn't that sound like depression? Consider this idea, that if an amoeba had an invisible energy wall around it, that when it tried to engulf food, that wall prevented it from doing it. And it would be just a matter of time before that amoeba would wither and die from lack of sustenance. So, what energy wall or force field could exist around a living being that would prevent it from reaching out for what it wants? The perception that there exists the pain of loss from failing to get what we want. Now, that's a complicated sentence, so I'm going to repeat it. The reason living things don't reach out for what they want is because they have a perception that there exists the pain of loss from failing to get what they want if they were to reach out. Perception of the pain of loss. It's not even real yet. It's not even real yet. But it serves as a force field or an energetic barrier to reaching out. And if we don't go through that, and we allow ourselves to be prevented from reaching out, growing, succeeding, becoming more effective at reaching out, we're going to be really unhappy people. The other day I received a phone call from a woman in London, England. She didn't receive or couldn't find an email that she should have gotten as a result of buying a digital downloadable package from our website. And the subsequent email would have been how to download some audio recordings and how to view online some video recordings. But she didn't get that. And so she felt that she didn't get what she had paid for, and so she called up and spoke to me about it. She was very pleasant about it. So as I looked up her name in the computer, she went on to tell me that she had recently purchased the Healing Code book and started using the universal code that's in there in order to reduce the stress in her life. She said that that code had helped her so much, helped her shift things, helped her to see things in different lights, in different ways. It was tremendous at reducing some of her stress. She felt like she was balanced and calm, and she was calm and pleasant in that call. And then she went on to say, if I hadn't done the healing codes, if I hadn't worked on this, I wouldn't have been able to make this phone call. Because in the past, I would have been afraid, I would have been anxious, I would have been angry that I didn't get what I wanted or didn't get what I ordered or didn't get what I was promised. I felt like I would had been abused or taken advantage of, or and on and on and on and on. And it would have been very difficult for her to make a call because of all the negative anticipation related to the outcome of that call. It's kind of like she would be dealing with a saber-toothed tiger, a real, real threat to her. But because of the code, that was not the case. That woman is the inspiration of this talk. She reduced the resistance in herself, right? So her mind wasn't so actively creating all these monsters on the other end of the phone that she was going to have to deal with and fight and walk away wounded from. She healed that. She also dissolved the invisible barrier around herself about getting what she wanted. She reached out, and she didn't create resistance in herself or me. There was no wrong-making, no fault-finding, no blame-throwing. She was just calm, cool, matter-of-fact, and she just stated what she had expected, what she wanted now, and what she thought was due her. And she did it very clearly, very calmly. During that conversation, a couple of things became clear to me, almost like principles. And this is one. If we reach out and continue to reach out for what we want without creating resistance in ourselves or in others, we are guaranteed to be successful. Guaranteed. Because we would just keep reaching out, reaching out, reaching out, reaching out. However many times it takes to accomplish getting what we wanted. The second principle out of that conversation that occurred to me was that only resistance can prevent us from having success at being or doing or having what we want. And we're the source of that resistance. We make it up in our minds. Now, clearly, we use memories, we use experience as our foundation for creating these scary, stressful, potentially unpleasant experiences before they occur again. So we do this to get all amped up, but it's not necessary. Because when we do that, we build up resistance within ourselves and other people, because we come across as hostile. And, you know, it's pretty easy to make a customer service person hostile by being, really unpleasant to them. Most of us are going to say, I resist the idea that we individually are the sources of the resistance that prevent our successes. But I think it's true. I think we individually are the ones that put the barriers, put the obstacles, use our fears to create these illusionary barriers and bars that imprison us in whatever conditions we're experiencing, that prevent us from moving forward, from creating what it is we want in our lives. So if we're the source of these resistances, let's just take a look at that for a minute. In the Emotional Freedom Technique, the creator of the Emotional Freedom Techniques, Gary Craig, used to refer to that tendency to do that as tail enders. So you make a statement, and at the very end of it, the tail end of that sentence, you put something that almost counteracts what you said in the first place, kind of like a hook of that pulls us away from what we just stated that we want. The tail enders are really the opposite of what we want, what we said we wanted, say we want, and could have. They just, boom, yes buts. We've all heard that expression, yes but, is a common expression that's used to refer to this tendency to short circuit our intention. I want this, but. Would you like this? Yes, but, and boom. And so we slam on the brake, even though one foot was on the gas pedal, then we start backing up. Not only the brake, but we start putting ourselves in reverse. Another way to describe this idea is intention, counterintention. And that takes into consideration that we often have conflicting impulses of desire and or fear. I want it, but right? And so we look at our goals, and if we only had, yes, I want this, period, without any kind of resistance, we would take action. We would think, feel, speak, take actions necessary to accomplish it. We would reach out without any resistance. But for most of us, we've got this habit of seeing what we want and then seeing all the reasons we ought not to have those goals, or the difficulty involved in it, or the downsides of having it. You know, are we going to disadvantage other people, or does this look like we're greedy or selfish if we're successful or healthy or happy? On and on and on. Let's go back to the amoeba and the invisible field of protection around it. It's not really a new concept. All living things can perceive pleasure and pain. Some are just more aware than others. That means that they can perceive the perceptions of pleasure and pain. Not just pleasure and pain, but the perceptions of it. So it's almost like we're dealing on a imaginary level, and literally we are dealing on an imaginary level. People, for sure, and even higher animals, can imagine pleasure and pain before they actually experience it. They can be trained that way. Now, we say that this is a normal characteristic of human consciousness, but animals in laboratories have been known to demonstrate this sort of thing, and it's part of a lot of those experiments that they do that shows how much learning can occur. But let's talk about now just human beings. Do we have an invisible force field around us? The answer is yes, we do. It's been labeled in a variety of ways. I could call it a biofield. I could call it an auric field, an energy field, morphogenetic field, a magnetic field, comfort zone, personal space, and probably some other labels that have been used over time. Contrary to popular myth, human beings don't only exist inside of their skins. You know, you've got a body that's skin-covered. You're actually extending outside of that. You're not just skin and in. Your field is you as well. that existence that you have, that I have, extends outside that body. And that extended space, I don't know how you could label it, but I like to label it as our consciousness. This field is our consciousness. So we can become conscious of somebody staring at us. We could be conscious of imminent threats. We could be conscious of the environment that we've walked into. We all know that sort of feeling. I think this is true. The more conscious we are, the greater the space that we occupy. Why? Because we're not afraid. We don't collapse inside of ourselves. We don't pull in like a turtle going into its shell in order to be protected, to be safe. If we know we be safe, then we're willing to occupy more space. I think the reverse is true, too, that as our consciousness decreases, fear, illness, weakness in our electrical signal, drugs, and so on, anesthesia, shock, the space that we occupy with our consciousness is going to decrease. Think of it like this. You look at a rock, and you look at a tree, and I'd say that that rock, even a plant, that rock, even though it is the same more or less size of the plant, that plant will occupy greater space because of its consciousness. The great thing is, we control the expansiveness of our consciousness. That's cool. We're control. We can expand it, shrink it, expand it, contract it. We're in charge of that. We can be, obviously, self-conscious when we have our consciousness, our attention, if you will, that direction of our attention on ourselves, or we can direct it outward and become other conscious. And I think that is what helps us to expand our consciousness, because we enfold many more things just other than just the things that are within our space. We now take in a lot more. And when we recognize that we're part of the whole, part of the world, part of our community, part of this huge environment, it's much more empowering, it's much more connected, much more loving, much more thrilling. The next step in this process of reaching out for what we want without creating resistance in ourselves and others is to notice the resistance when it happens. So much of this stuff is habitual. It's like, unless somebody is standing outside of us, oh, did you hear that resistance? You just hear that? Well, that was a tail ender. That was a yes, but. That was a counter intention that followed your intention. A lot of times, you can't really hear it. But you'll notice over time, as you become mindful of this, I said one thing, and before that energy was delivered, I reversed myself. It was almost as if that signal is going out, and all of a sudden, it came back. I drew it back. I pulled my punch, if you will. Seeing that, hearing that, feeling that, and knowing when others are starting to resist is, you're going to hear it in other people now. It's a lot easier just to listen to how people talk. They're going to say something about what they want, and then they start to build all the obstacles, all the barriers, all the problems, all the reasons why they can't. Very, very interesting. And when we hear that, we know that they've got beliefs that are being activated by their expressing a desire, their expression of a goal as they begin this activity of reaching out for what they want. Just imagine their hand going out, reaching out for what they want, and then pulling it back. I use the 10 emotional state scale, because it's convenient, easy to remember, and it's a handy tool to identify what field, what vibrational field we're standing in as we process information. We can think of these 10 emotional states: shame, apathy, grief, fear, lust, anger, pride, courageousness, acceptance, and peace, as kind of having varying levels of energetic resistance. That's almost as if that field around us is thicker or thinner, harder to get through or easier to get through for other signals. Just imagine that. And it's kind of easy to see that shame as a state, that we're going to be kind of like a rock, refusing even to consider reaching out. You know why? Because we have already concluded that we're defective. We perceive ourselves to be defective. What's the purpose? Why? Totally disqualified from reaching out for what we want. Don't deserve it. We're broken. Apathy, one step up, would have a resistance that seems to tell us, this is hard, this is complex, this is difficult, this is tiring, this is that reaching out for what I want is like takes more energy than I could possibly muster. Right? You can hear that apathy, depression, with that sort of belief system. You can hear that resistance being pretty thick. Grief, the next step up, would have us focus on what we lost and the pain of that loss. Now, as we consider reaching out again, the resistance due to the previous losses would, if you have stuff, you can lose stuff. If you don't have stuff, you can't lose stuff. And you remember how painful loss was, and it's like, you got that kind of resistance going on. Reaching for what we want is still really difficult. One step up, fear. This would caution us to be tentative because, don't be careful how you reach here. We got to think about the anticipation of the pain of loss or worse. Don't rush in. Fools rush in, that sort of thing. And this state is the position in which we're teetering between moving ahead, reaching out for what we want, or moving backward, which will stop our progress or reaching altogether. So, depending on what we do, let's say we're going to take one step forward, then, or one step up vibrationally, we would be in lust. Lust is reaching out for what we want, but it also contains its own resistance of desperation. And desperation is really a belief in scarcity, non-availability. It's difficult to have. It's absolutely the only thing that will do the job. I gotta have it. This is a must. Whatever that substance or that activity happens to be. Along with that intense need, though, comes a perception that, it seems to be trying to avoid me. It's hard to acquire. So the chase is on. But we are now reaching more than we were at those lower levels of emotional states. Anger, which I call the emotion of stop. We use anger to stop what is happening or what might happen. We resist. We push away. We don't reach so much for what we want. We reach for ways to stop what we don't want. We want to stop stuff, not get stuff. And we start to lose the ability to distinguish that those are two separate things. You can see that as I describe these emotional states and the resistance, the amount of energy that a person can or will direct for the purpose of reaching a positive goal goes from a very, very low amount to greater amounts as we go up. So one more step up to the level of pride. The resistance decreases considerably here, but the attention drifts off of what our goal was, our thinking of what we're reaching for, and it shifts to ourselves. And we start to think of ourselves as so cool, so superior, so together, so with it, so on top of the world, that that's a risky place to stop. You're familiar with this cliche, pride comes before the fall. It's true. It's true. That shift in focus, take our eye off the ball of what we're trying to accomplish, and now all of a sudden we turned around and we looked at ourselves in self-adulation. And it is that overestimation of ourselves really makes us very vulnerable to falls, tripping up, and so on. I kind of think that this is what happens to politicians when they self-destruct with marital affairs, infidelity, and so on, like the John Edwards and other people like that, or the Tiger Woods of the world. They get so full of themselves, they start to lose touch with a greater reality. I think the problem is that when we're in pride, we stop reaching out for more awareness. Why? Because we think we already achieved it. I know everything I need to know. I am so cool. I'm so this. I'm so that. And now there's no more information coming in because we think we have it all figured out. But we're still moving forward. It's kind of like driving the car. And we say, I totally know this route. We close our eyes and our ears and continue driving. That's an accident waiting to happen. And that's what pride is. Courageousness, which is now we start to get into the top three more positive areas, right? Courageousness, commonly understood to be enthusiasm. And you can imagine that there's very little resistance because it seems like it's fun. That person in courageousness is open to exploring and discovering. They're having fun. They're reaching out in an excited, pleasant, interested way, and that is appealing. Not only do they not have resistance within themselves, other people witnessing that, unless they're very low on that scale, will find their energy, their courageousness, their enthusiasm, their excitement to be very attractive, very endearing. If they're very low down, they will make it about themselves, and they'll see that from a jealous point of view or a threat point of view. But not only does it, for a normal person, will not generate resistance in them, it'll actually generate cooperation and affection and support for the enthusiastic person. That's pretty appealing. Acceptance and peace, the top two highest emotional states on this convenience scale, have even less resistance. These are the goals of many people, myself included, and many processes too, such as the healing codes and prayer and meditation and lots of others. Those are fantastic. When we put our attention on any object, we should be able to notice what we say to ourselves, how we feel about ourselves, and our abilities to effectively advance our own self-interest. That, it's that self-talk right there that you want to listen to, because it's either supportive or it's resistant. We're going to be able to hear the resistance that we anticipate, and we start to amp up, kind of like we're going to go into battle, or the fear or the doubt that we can succeed, or the ease at which we're going to have what we want. That's really the area that we want our awareness to be focused on. When we put our attention on an object that we want, a goal or whatever, a relationship, it is what we offer, the energy that we offer right there, is a great indicator of where we stand, what might need to be healed. As we seek to extend our comfort zone, right, because we want to include more knowledge, more activities, more people, more stuff, you know, physical things. Physical things are fun, cool to have. We're going to realize that we can get to the place where we don't attack because we don't perceive threats. When we see it from a courageousness or enthusiastic point of view, that is totally different than from a lust point of view or an apathy point of view. One of the challenges we've got to come to terms with, because we see this stuff all the time, we see it on the news, we read it in the papers, is, you know, and you can look at the current geopolitical behaviors that let's kill everything that we perceive to be threats. That's unworkable. That's unworkable. Killing the threats is not the answer, because then we just add more threats to the list. What we need to do is be more effective perceivers, not more effective killers. So if we could perceive the similarities and the needs of other people as well as ourselves and recognize they're not my threat and I'm not their threat, and as they recognize that and we recognize that, now all of a sudden this idea of bombing and shooting and killing and imprisoning everybody is a lot less appealing. And I would say that as our awareness increases, we will come to understand that what we really want is to be safe to reach out. We want to be safe to reach out. As I said, material things are fine, and it creates jobs for people during the day so they can earn livings to support families and so on. I'm in favor of that. But material things are actually a low-quality substitute for what we really want, what we are designed to want, and that is to understand and experience the source of our being. Whatever this power is, power with a capital P, whatever that power is, that's really what we want a relationship with. Not just to consume stuff all day long, every day. We want to be able to establish that relationship. We want to be able to reach out for that. That's really what we want. And once we can heal this tendency to create the resistance because of some perceived bad that we have done sometime in our lives, it will make it so much easier for us to reach out to the source of our being. By reaching out in thought and feeling to divine consciousness and asking for enlightenment, the roots and our reaching and our spiritual hunger will be satisfied. I would like to end this service with a prayer. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.